Man, oh man, inside 3 weeks, strap yourself in. It's just going to be completely unhinged media coverage of this political campaign for the rest of October into November. Welcome, everybody, to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. They're going nuts. They have just, like I often say when I'm comparing someone who's utterly unhinged, it's like John Belushi in the old Weekend Update segment on Saturday Night Live, getting more and more upset and anxious.
He'd twist himself into a fit and then fall off the chair.
During his commentaries. You know, wait, just wait. I'm trying to make my point. And then he spins off his stool. That's about where our news media, we got several examples of that coming your way today on The Commute with Carlson. We also have some great guests. We're going to tell you where to get the cheapest gasoline in Washington State. In fact, I'll give you a big hint. It's up in Everett. And Brian Haywood is going to join us and tell you where in Everett you can get the cheapest gas in Washington State. And also the latest update on the four initiatives. Now, understand, the reason I keep talking about the four initiatives, if they pass, change not just policy in Washington State. The four initiatives change politics in Washington State. Everything changes if those initiatives pass. Because up to now, and this explains the extremism and the arrogance of the legislature as it's become a one-party town, is, look, if we have majorities in the House and Senate and we have the governor's office, we don't have to pay attention to the Republicans who are in the legislature. We can just negotiate with ourselves. It's one-party rule. And what are you going to do about it? There's nothing you can do. And the answer up until this year was, yeah, there's very little you can do. Except Brian Haywood launches six initiatives, which the Democrats didn't think any would make the ballot. They all made the ballot. The Democrats vowed to ignore them because they were MAGA, because they were extreme. And then they realized, wait a minute, these so-called extreme initiatives, they're all going to be on the ballot when our candidates are running for re-election, who oppose these initiatives that are supposedly extreme. But maybe they're not so extreme because we think they're going to pass. In fact, our internal polling tells us they're going to pass with like 2/3 majority vote. So the Democrats made three of those initiatives law. The police chase initiative, the initiative that outlaws an income tax of any type by any level of government, and the parents have a right to know education initiative. All of those were made law. The Democrats feared them. They also feared the other three, but they also involved money. So they said, it's worth a fight. Let's fight it out. And so the initiative that would strike down Olympia's, quote, Climate Commitment Act, close quote, which was really a massive tax on gasoline, so they're redistributing money from working class folks who buy gasoline and giving it to politically connected businesses and local governments to buy them off, that will be on your ballot. The capital gains tax, which they imposed, is 7% capital gains tax and income tax on people's investment income. They imposed this tax when they were running a surplus. That's going to be on the ballot. And then the third initiative that would make the state's ridiculous and absurd long-term care program optional rather than mandatory and remove the payroll tax that you have been paying. Did you know that? Yes, since June of 23, you've been paying a payroll tax. That would become, again, optional, your choice. And then Brian Haywood noticed at the very end of the legislative session at 2 in the morning, and believe me, when Olympia does anything at 2 in the morning, it's not because they're trying to serve the public interest. They're trying to do something either corrupt or radical or both. In this case, it was both. This is the bill to mandate a phased-in ban on natural gas for restaurants, for businesses, or for residents. And they would drive up the price until then. And that's when Brian Haywood's Let's Go Washington operation got into overdrive and produced. And, of course, KVI listeners were integral to this. I was out there collecting signatures like a whole lot of you were doing. A record number of signatures, over 500,000. Over 500,000. And that will be on the ballot. So if those things become law, number one, the Inslee legacy lies in ruins while he's still there, which I really like the idea of that happening. Second, you know what it does? Again, as I said a few minutes ago, it not just changes policy, it changes politics. Now, these arrogant legislators, these extreme legislators, Olympia is becoming like the Seattle City Council was a few years ago, just led by its most extreme elements who, frankly, frighten the less extreme elements. They frighten them by cowing them into towing the line. Now, when they get extreme, they can be overruled. The people can strike down what they do. And that changes the game, folks. That changes Olympia. So that's why these initiatives have to pass. It's why it's so important.
John, I told you I got the ballot last week here, and I was just curious when you look at it, who composes the description, because it's very wordy and confusing. Even I was getting confused.
Yeah.
So remind us of these four.
Vote yes.
Yes for less.
Pay less.
Okay.
Vote yes, pay less. The initiatives were worded by Bob Ferguson's office, the Attorney General's office.
That was my next question.
They deliberately make them vague. For instance, the initiative that overturns the invisible tax on gasoline doesn't mention gasoline. It doesn't mention gas prices going down. They deliberately made the wording opaque and obtuse.
Yeah, it's hard to see the word repeal, but you will see it eventually in each of the descriptions. But that was the only cue I got, like, okay, that's right. Yes for less.
So all you need to know is that you vote yes on all of them. Vote yes to stop what Olympia is doing. Vote yes to end these mandates, these taxes, these regulations. Vote yes to stop them from seizing your right to have natural gas. You vote to stop them. So it's vote yes, pay less. Vote yes to stop what Olympia has been doing. Okay, so with that said, ladies and gentlemen, it's Wednesday on the John Carlson Show, 16th day of October. And you know what that means. Legendary Lyric Day is upon us. Oh, I've got a good one here. I've got a good one here.
Yeah, you do.
Are you ready for this? This is a lyric from a song that charted, that hit the top 40 in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. As Casey Kasem would say, and all with different artists. So, it charted 4 times. It is a classic hit. But do you recognize the lyric?
We could play any version, wide open.
Yeah, I'll tell you the version I think you should play.
All right.
Okay, during the break.
Okay.
Hearts go astray, leaving hurt when they go. I went away just when you needed me so. Filled with regret, I come back begging you, forgive, forget. Where's the love we once knew? And if it doesn't ring a bell immediately, just keep working it over in your head, and eventually you might figure it out, but we will play it. We'll play it going in or coming back from commercial break. When you hear that lyric, be caller number 10 to 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. And some nice prizes coming your way.
Big, thick Daniel's Broiler USDA Prime Steak to get this one today here. Oh, yeah. Specialties, they've got the chicken, John, we know, and Phil, the fresh seafood you like here, high-end spirits. Think about Daniel's Broiler for the holiday party maybe you got planned for this year. 4 locations to choose from here. Bellevue, downtown Seattle, Leschi there, just north of the floating bridge in South Lake Union. Also, a new book, Follow the Science, from award-winning investigative news reporter and host of ABC's TV's Full Measure, Cheryl Atkinson, through blatant lies, deep cover-ups, and high-level collusion in government and media. Big Pharma has continuously put profits over people with dangerous results. Now, her signature investigative rigor and uncompromising commitment to the facts. Cheryl Atkinson takes readers on a shocking journey through the dark underbelly of the pharmaceutical industry. It's quite a read.
All right. So, that's what you got. One more time on your lyric. Hearts go astray, leaving hurt when they go. I went away just when you needed me so. Filled with regret, I come back begging you, forgive, forget, where's the love we once knew? All right. I guarantee when you hear it, you go, oh, yeah, of course, of course. Okay, you've got 16 minutes after 9 o'clock, the commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI. For crying out loud, the U.S. Navy missing a pilot and navigator, not overseas, but near, right here in Washington State, near Mount Rainier. Como Force Preston Phillips says a search is ongoing for 2 Navy crew members.
A Navy EA-18G Growler crashed during a routine training flight. 2 crew members were on board. Right now, their status is unknown. Multiple search and rescue teams have been deployed to search the area.
Okay. Mark Christopher.
Yeah, you know, I'll just say, too, East, if you ever go to Bumping Lake, Bumping River, in that area, you often see them fly at low altitude there. Just unbelievable how low they go. But, yeah, these were just at Seafair. Mm-hmm. We had Naval Air Station Whidbey down here with the EA electronic attack. FA stands for fighter attack, but the 18G Growlers. Maximum speed, 1,190 miles per hour. Speed of sound, about 700. John, these are so special to our country from the Boeing company. Nobody else in the world is allowed to have one. Unless you prove the need for one and you go through some rigorous information and sharing of what you're going to do. Last I heard, Australia, I was told this at Seafair from the crew from Whidbey, is the only other country that has access to these aircraft.
Aren't these the successor to the Prowlers?
Yes. Yeah. And think of a supersized F-18 Blue Angel. That's what this Growler is all about. I mean, it's just high-tech.
Do we have any updated information about...
Still missing, don't know where the pilots are. There's only been about 173 of these built since October of 2004 to present time.
Yeah. Boy, we are hoping and praying for the best here. But it's very concerning when apparently there was no distress call and apparently no radio contact.
Yeah, and you're just wondering about GPS and radar. I know some challenging weather's on the way. As well. So just prayers to the families and the search and rescue Coast Guard and everybody in the Navy involved.
The search going on for this growler. It happened yesterday afternoon, and they still have not located the plane or the two crew members. You are listening to The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 19 minutes after 6. Philip J. Vandervoort III. And when you hear it, be caller number 10. Some prizes coming your way. Hearts go astray, leaving hurt when they go. I went away just when you needed me so. Filled with regret, I come back begging you. Forgive, forget. Where's the love we once knew? A big hit in several decades. Different artists. What is that song? When you hear that lyric, be caller number 10, 206-421-5757. And tell us one of the artists, any of the artists would be fine, or the name of the song, you're the winner. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, what is going on in the social media world?
We've got new polling about Americans and their trust in news media. And as you were kind of saying at the beginning of the show, 3 weeks to Election Day, and it's going to be a roller coaster ride. That'll be a part of it. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. This polling comes from Gallup, a pretty solid source of polling for the United States.
Well, plus
on
they have
a number of issues.
They have polls that ask the same question
year over year.
Yes, so you can compare
a
trend. How are Americans becoming more trustful or less trustful? Yep. I haven't seen the poll. I knew you were going to talk about it, so I held back.
Okay,
I'm going to guess that Americans have less confidence in the media.
Let's put it this way. According to the latest polling from the month of September, when they asked these questions from Gallup, trust in mass media in the United States is at an all-time low. So
all-time.
Never been lower. And they've been doing this since 1974, it appears.
By the end of this election, I wonder if anyone will trust the news media.
Yeah.
Their coverage, and I'm going to give you some examples coming up here.
Yeah, right.
Just
we have more examples today.
Atrocious.
That contribute to this.
Just atrocious.
Yeah. So it's 31% of people polled reported having a great deal or a fair amount of trust in media. And then they apply the term media to include newspapers, TV, and radio. I would love to see a breakout if you set aside TV and newspapers and then did separate polling on radio. I bet it would be a little bit different. Newspapers and TV outlets seem to have crossed the line so many more times than you ever hear about or see documented about radio reports.
Well, the difference.
We'll set that aside for now.
The difference is I use standards of good journalism, but I'm an opinion journalist. My views are face up on the table for everyone to see.
Sure.
My cards are right there for everyone to look at.
Sure.
These people like David Muir.
ABC News.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or what we saw with Face the Nation's a moderator.
That Margaret Brennan.
They claim to be neutral. They claim to be objective.
They'll claim to be America's news anchor, right?
Well, for heaven's sakes, they're neither.
Yeah.
They're very, and as the election draws closer and it looks like Trump is gaining momentum, they're showing where their real biases and people don't like it.
A little context to this, the Gallup survey was done in early September, surveyed over 1,000 adults in America, age 18 and older. So 1,000 is a pretty decent sample size. I'm guessing there's probably a 4-something percent margin of error in all of that. But basically, Gallup first asked the questions about Americans' trust in mass media back in 1972, and it has measured it most years since 1997. So the latest findings, 36% say they have reported having no trust at all in the media.
Wow.
So there's over a third of Americans that are not going to trust news media at any point. And then 33% reported having not very much trust. So two-thirds of the American public really, really, really deeply skeptical of whether or not they can trust mass media and major news media.
Given how the media now perform,
Right?
I'm actually glad.
Yeah.
Because it means that Americans are paying attention and they recognize the slippage in standards among the so-called legacy media, mainstream media, whatever you want to call them. They're not what they used to be.
You bet. One more from the social media handle of Sweet Meteor of Death, which is sort of a satirical, sarcastic social media handle. And Sweet Meteor of Death posted, "Reminder, if you are emotionally invested in the electoral success of any individual politician, you have already lost." And I think that goes to the cult of personality that has managed to emerge over the last decade or more in the United States, particularly when it comes to national politics and or the presidential politics.
Interesting.
So,
all right.
There it is.
At 29 and a half minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, we talked yesterday about the Virginia, the outrage in the state of Virginia, where the Department of Justice, okay, Joe Biden's Justice Department, run by Merrick Garland, is telling Virginia to set aside its 18-year-old law and stop removing people off their voting rolls who admit that they're not citizens. They admit in writing they're not citizens, and yet somehow they managed to get on the voting rolls. So Virginia's been taking them off. The Department of Justice says, no, don't do that. John Fund, one of America's premier authorities on voting rights, joins us to talk about just how unprecedented this is. The Commute with Carlson continues. It's 6:30. Good morning.
Road Studios, three takes. Few overdubs, out of vocals, out the door by four.
The good old days. It is 36 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Yesterday, we told you the story about what is going down in Virginia, which, again, to me is just stunning. When you have evidence that someone is breaking the law, you would think the Justice Department would want you to take action. The state of Virginia has found people on their voting rolls who are illegal immigrants. And they're being told by the Justice Department to leave them on the voting rolls. Just unbelievable. I've never seen this before. Andrew McCarthy, who's a former federal prosecutor, says that the Biden administration is trying to influence the election by promoting voting by some of the illegal aliens it has ushered into the country. That's the upshot of the Department of Justice suing Virginia because they are trying to remove people from their voting rolls who are not citizens. The evidence that Virginia has that they're not citizens is that the people themselves on the voting rolls admit that they're not citizens. They were on their driver's license application, they marked the box that they are not U.S. citizens, yet somehow they ended up on the voting rolls. So every so often, they clean the voting rolls. Secretaries of state are supposed to do that on a regular basis. People move. People die. You've got to keep your voting rolls clean. And the Department of Justice says, no, no, you can't be removing these people. This is unbelievable. Now, John Fund, who I have known for well over 30 years, is one of America's premier authorities on voting. And John Fund, first of all, welcome to the show. It's good to hear your voice.
Richard, thanks.
And secondly, I've never seen anything like this before. What's going on?
I have.
Look, okay. Well, yes.
We have, everybody knows that the voter registration rolls are outdated, filled with names that shouldn't be on there, and no marketer or commercial enterprise would ever rent this list because it's useless. So, but people are registered to vote on it. And most states allow you to register to vote when you're renewing your driver's license. In Virginia, people were asked on a computer screen, do you want to register to vote? And you have to check a box. And they either checked the box saying that they were a non-citizen or they didn't answer whether they were a citizen. They were then supposed to be invited to send information verifying their citizenship status, and they didn't do so. There are about 6,100 of these names, and they've been on the rolls for a while. You're right. It's a periodical cleaning of the registration rolls. It was done months ago. And sure enough, here we are 470 hours before the election, and the Biden-Harris Justice Department is stepping in saying you can't remove those names, even though all the evidence is that they're non-citizens. I call this ridiculous because you're not supposed to make changes to the election procedures of a state so close to the election. And, you know, Virginia has been very close in the past. There have been two statewide elections in that yes. state in recent years that were decided by less than 1,000 votes. So it's important.
Well, not only that, but Virginia, I've been saying for a while that if there is a state outside the seven by now well-known swing states, you know, we've got your three industrial states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, you've got Georgia, you've got Arizona, you've got Nevada. If there is a seven, if there is a North Carolina is your seventh state. If there's an eighth state, I would say it would be possibly Virginia with a Republican governor, John.
Yes. And not only that, but there are very competitive congressional races there. And as we know, the House could be decided by one or two seats in the end.
Yeah, no, the House is really going to be close. We're getting some good news on the Senate, but the House is going to be very close. So Glenn Youngkin, what are his options? Because he sounded defiant. We played his remarks yesterday when he said this is just ridiculous and we're going to oppose this. What are his options?
Well, I would say to wait for a court hearing, and I doubt that there's going to be an injunction against his executive action removing the names. What this is, there's a larger point there which affects more than just Virginia, and that is Democrats are making two statements at the same time. First is non-citizen voting is not a problem. End of story. Second, we don't want you to look at it. We don't want you to ask any questions about it because it's not a problem. You got that yet? And they can't have it both ways. If there's no problem, they shouldn't have any problem with people looking at it and discovering, lo and behold, there are people, and this is all over the country. Here's how we know they're non-citizens on the registration rolls and voting. People are asked to submit to jury duty. They often get replies back saying, I can't serve on your jury. I'm a non-citizen. But then their name shows up on the voter registration list, and some of them vote. In the case of Virginia, in Fairfax County, about 16% of the people who got jury notices said they couldn't vote, serve on the jury, were actually registered and voting. So it does happen, and in a very close race, it can make the difference. Remember, George W. Bush was elected president in 2000 by 531 votes in one state, which was Florida.
A big one. Yes, Florida. So, John, the U.S. Constitution requires that you be of age. At the time it was written, the age was 21, and the Constitution was amended in the early 70s to make it 18. And it also stipulates you must be a U.S. citizen. So every state checks your age when you register to vote. They verify your age. How do they verify citizenship? How do they check it?
They don't. They ask you a question on the registration form. are you a citizen? And there's no attempt to verify it.
Why isn't that changing? I mean, for instance, if your kid wants to play Little League, you've got to bring a birth certificate and prove that they're the age of that covered by the Little League they want to play in. Whether they want to play, you know, Pony League, you know, Little League, Pee Wee, et cetera, you have to bring a birth certificate. Why isn't there some sort of mechanism for ensuring that the people who are voting in America's elections are American citizens?
Well, if several states have passed that requirement. Arizona tried to do that. It was sued. And it ended up that there's now a bifurcated ballot in Arizona. If you have presented proof of citizenship, you get to vote on everything. If you haven't presented proof of citizenship, you only get to vote in federal elections and for president.
So we're less than 3 weeks out. How are you feeling about the credibility of America's upcoming presidential election?
Depends how close it is. If it's not close, no one is going to ask uncomfortable questions. If it is close, the dirty secret of American elections in many states is going to be revealed, which is our election systems are often so sloppy you can't tell where the incompetence ends and the fraud begins.
It's very interesting. Supposedly, technology was supposed to make cheating more difficult.
It does. For people who say they want to go back to all paper ballots, that creates all kinds of problems of their own. I've seen voter fraud with my own eyes committed with a paper ballot. So technology can be your friend. For example, I don't think that there's wholesale rewriting of computer software to change election results. But if you have loosey-goosey rules that prevent people from verifying basic information, like California now makes it illegal for an election worker to ask for your voter ID. You also have places that say you can't verify citizenship. The answer is, what are they worried about? What are they hiding? We have requirements to show documentation for everything, everything. And the only response I've ever gotten is, well, you know, some of those things are not a constitutional right, like voting. Well, let me tell you, marriage is about as basic a constitutional right as you can get. And whether it's gay or straight, you have to prove who you are when you get a marriage license, but not when you're voting.
Well, I would also argue that requiring ID, proof of citizenship, or rather proof of your identity when you're at the polls, that safeguards everyone else's voting rights. Because it means that the integrity of the ballot, of the voting rolls, is being maintained. If you have widespread cheating, my right as a constitutional voter has been diluted.
You're exactly right. There are two civil rights. One is to make sure there's no intimidation or suppression or artificial rules barring someone from voting. We fought a great civil rights struggle in the 60s to make sure that would happen. We have to continue those efforts. But you also have a second civil right, not to have your vote canceled out by someone who doesn't exist, someone who's moved out of state, someone who is voting who's not eligible. That's a civil right, too. And we have to protect both civil rights, and we can't.
John Fund from National Review. Check out his great articles. Another just superb article about California bureaucrats on the Coastal Commission harassing Elon Musk and SpaceX. You got to check that out. Again, that's nationalreview.com, nationalreview.com. John Fund, always great hearing your voice. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
You bet. It is coming up on 11 minutes to 7 o'clock. Our good buddy Lars Larson right around the corner on the commute with Carlson. Eric, when you hear it going in or coming back from commercial break, be caller number 10. Prizes coming your way. Hearts go astray, leaving hurt when they go. I went away just when you needed me so. Filled with regret, I come back begging you Forgive, forget, where's the love we once knew? It's from a hit, a huge hit, a four-time hit, believe it or not, over four decades. When you hear it, be caller number 10. Lars Larson, you can't play the contest.
No, I can't sing either, but I was thinking it'd be fun if Phil took one of those times when you speak the lyrics and ran it through auto-tune to see what it sounds like.
Oh, well, he'd have something real quick, real quick. Okay, Lars Larson, wanted to talk to you about Kamala Harris. She was asked about racial reparations.
Yep.
Here's what she said. This was just yesterday on a radio talk show, Charlemagne the God, very popular in the black community.
So to your point, yes, I am running to be a president for all Americans. That being said, I do have clear eyes about the disparities that exist and the context in which they exist, meaning history, to your point. So my agenda, well, first of all, on the point of reparations, it has to be studied. There's no question about that. And I've been very clear about that position.
Wow.
It has to be studied. That's a sleazy answer, because she could either say, I'm in favor of it, or I'm not. But, you know, you don't get straight answers out of her, number one. Number two, I've got a technical question for you, and that is Kamala Harris, depending on the day, is either South Asian or she's black, depending on which interpretation you're using and which media is reporting it. Would she qualify?
Or what she is emphasizing.
Yeah, and what she's emphasizing. Would she qualify, since her family tree has owned slaves itself, would she still qualify for reparations?
Oh, no, she's got to be writing a check, right?
I would think. Right. I would think.
Thank you, Lars Larson. Every day of the week, work week from noon till 3. Hour number 2, The Commute, right around the corner. 3.5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show, for this 16th day of October, Wednesday edition of The Commute with Carlson. Thank you for joining me. If there is something that you want to let me know about, all you have to do is either call or text. It's the same number. So if you have a comment, you have a question, you will have an observation, go ahead. Let us know, 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. So, to give you an idea of just how low the Kamala Harris campaign will go to try and regain its momentum that they have been steadily losing. Again, they were 4-5 points up a few weeks ago, and now the race is a dead heat with the momentum swinging in Donald Trump's direction in the swing states. And so the Democrats are trying to appeal to parts of their political base that are wandering away. Hispanics have been wandering away for a while. The Democrats' strategy that they thought would gain them more Hispanic votes actually blew up in their face. It's costing them Hispanic votes and a lot of other votes, too, and that is the border. Hispanics who vote, who are citizens, are no happier with the situation on the border than anybody else. So you can almost call that poetic justice. The other segment of the Democrats' electoral base that they're worried about are black men, particularly younger black men. And so how are they trying to get them back on board? Are they touting the success of the Biden economy? Well, no. They're trying to scare them. They are playing on paranoia and conspiracy themes. Just the other day, we played you James Carville, who was Bill Clinton's manager back in 92 and now is known as the Ragin' Cajun, where he said that Donald Trump was a Nazi, that this rally he's going to have in New York is reminiscent of the Nazi rallies in Berlin, and that he's going to put people in camps. And he said, you young black voters, how do you think you're going to do well when he starts scooping up his political opponents and throwing them in these encampments? He said this. We played it. Unbelievable. Well, Kamala Harris is continuing along that vein with racial politicking. Listen to this. She's taking phone calls on the syndicated radio show, Charlemagne the God calls himself. It's called The Breakfast Club radio show. Goes around the country. And they were taking calls. And you'll hear her take a call from a man in Georgia asking if Donald Trump is going to start locking up non-white people. I'm sure this wasn't a setup, this phone call. But anyway, have a listen. Here's how she handled it.
Let's go to talk back, Eddie.
Hi, I'm Bobby from Georgia, and I have a question for Kamala Harris. Could you please respond to Trump's claim that he's going to use the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 to round up immigrants if he wins the election? This law was last used to put Asian Americans in internment camps during World War II, and I have a sneaking suspicion that if Trump wins, he's going to use this law to put anyone that doesn't look white in camps, and I'm scared.
Mm. Now, the proper response is, well, let's not get carried away. You know, I understand your concerns about Donald Trump, but let's not be paranoid. Oh, no, 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 no. Instead, you get this.
Yeah, so you've hit on a really important point and expressed it, I think, so well, which is he is achieving his intended effect to make you scared. He is running full time on a campaign that is about instilling fear, not about hope, not about optimism, not about the future, but about fear.
Yeah. Well, here's my question. Who's trying to frighten people? Who's trying to scare people here? It's not Donald Trump. It's Kamala Harris. She's the one trying to scare people by feeding into this kind of paranoia. And like I've said before, it's this kind of remarks that we hear from James Carville. This caller, again, almost certainly a setup with Kamala Harris playing in to the fear card. Yes, you make a very important point. Donald Trump may start rounding people up if they're non-white. And he's running on fear. The bottom line is you don't hear about the politics of joy anymore now, do you? This is the politics of fear. Kamala Harris is the politics of fear. And when she's not playing to fear, she's trying to play on racial entitlement. Check out this question that happened. Same radio show, same audience, a largely black audience from Charlemagne the God.
My question to you is, what's your stance on reparations? We all know that America became great, you know, off the backs of free black labor. How progressive are you on making it a priority?
And here's her answer.
So to your point, yes, I am running to be a president for all Americans. That being said, I do have clear eyes about the disparities that exist and the context in which they exist, meaning history, to your point. So my agenda, well, first of all, on the point of reparations, it has to be studied. There's no question about that. And I've been very clear about that position.
Oh, so now we should be open to race reparations. Again, they'll do anything. They'll do anything. By the way, the Trump campaign should let this remark play out for middle America. Let's see how the rest of America, not just the radio listening audience of Charlemagne the God, let's see how the rest of the country reacts to Kamala Harris being open to race reparations. For the record, we have had reparations in America one time. That was in the 1980s, to give reparations several thousand dollars to those who had been interned, Japanese Americans, not Asian Americans, as was incorrectly said, Japanese Americans who were interned on the West Coast during the Second World War. What's interesting about these reparations is they didn't go to the grandchildren. They didn't even go to the children. They went to those who were interned. Period. And here you have Kamala Harris said, yes, we should study whether to have reparations for the great, 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 great grandchildren. And again, Kamala Harris herself does not trace her ancestry to slavery. In fact, quite the opposite. Kamala Harris's ancestry is in the slave-owning business. On her mother's side, they were slave owners, not slaves. So, you know, maybe Kamala, maybe you should write a check if you believe in this kind of down the generational ranks of people being responsible. Maybe you should write a check. But again, this is so ugly. Their attempt to play on race, their attempt to play on paranoia, play on entitlement, play on resentment, and claim that your opponent is trying to scare people while you are saying he just might. Yet you make a really good point that Donald Trump might want to round up and put non-white people in camps. You know, that is what James Carville said the other day. That is what this caller said to the radio show, that she said, it's a very important point you're making, and you made it so well. That's how low they're going to go in this race. And they should be called out for it by the media, that what they're doing is disgraceful, but they probably won't be. That is where they are at. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Still to come on The Commute with Carlson, Todd Myers will be joining us. The Associated Press has a piece here, which is just, again, just a wonderful example of how politicized the media is getting 3 weeks out from the election and on local stuff. This is an AP article on the Initiative 2117 to strike down the Climate Commitment Act, which raised the price of gas at one point over 50 cents a gallon, giving us some of the highest gas prices in the country. We'll read excerpts of what the Associated Press had to say, and then we'll have Todd Myers respond to it. As the commute with Carlson continues, it is 16 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock. It's 22 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Cloudy out there. Baby, the rain will fall later on today. Scattered showers. But Philip J. Vandervoort III is about to tell you what is going on in the social media world when it comes to socialists posting on social media. What's happening?
Is Tim Walz a socialist? We haven't necessarily had a pronouncement on that per se.
Here's what he said. Here's what he said. Has said. He is every bit as liberal as Gavin Newsom and Jay Inslee. But he has said, quote, one man's socialism is another man's.
Right.
One man's socialism is another man's.
I retract my previous question. We've got it confirmed. Evidence provided by John Carlson.
One man's socialism is another man's neighborliness.
The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I bring all this up. Tim Walz was doing a Harris-Walz campaign event, and he went after J.D. Vance, and it sort of seemed unsolicited, but I guess this is what happens in politics nowadays. You just got to attack your opponent when you can't find something coherent or productive to say about your own self and your own campaign. So this clip is circulating on social media where Tim Walz goes after J.D. Vance for being a venture capitalist. Here's a little bit of what Walz said.
And Senator Vance, he became a media darling. He wrote a book about the place he grew up, but the premise was trashing that place where he grew up rather than lifting it up.
That's not true.
This guy's a venture capitalist cosplaying like he's a cowboy or something. I don't even know what a venture capitalist does most.
Duh.
So, is that a bright thing for Tim Walz to admit? I don't even know what a venture capitalist does.
By the way, I've read that book.
Yeah, trying to be folksy.
Hillbilly Elegy. Yeah. I read it several years ago. He does not trash the place he grew up. He was very honest about the place he grew up.
Yeah, I saw the movie. I didn't read the book, but it does seem to display the problems of rural America and the drug addiction problems that his mom goes through and the struggle to raise him with his grandmother and stuff like that. So I don't know that that's amounting to trashing.
He was talking about growing up in a close-knit community where you have economic dislocation, economic recession, together with hopelessness and increasing amounts of drug and alcohol addiction, and what it was like growing up as a boy in that environment. So you, on the one hand, he loves the people around him, and he talks about how when a funeral goes by, people pull over and get out of their car and put their hats over their chest.
Yeah, do it as the show of respect. Yeah,
funeral procession goes by, and on the other hand, all of the problems that were part of his. So he wasn't trashing. He was giving an honest accounting. This is life in Appalachia.
Yeah, kind of what sometimes gets referred to as flyover territory, flyover country in the United States,
and
gets forgotten about.
I doubt that Tim Walz has read the book.
Yeah, I would be surprised.
I wonder if he's ever read a book.
He certainly hasn't been reading up on venture capitalism. He's admitted as much to that. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a U.S. congresswoman. And she responded to something that U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania John Fetterman posted.
Mm-hmm.
And Fetterman posted this week about the Gaza-Hamas-Israel war. He posted, the tragedy is in Gaza. The tragedy in Gaza is 100% on Hamas. So that's what Fetterman posted. He indicated.
Good for him.
He posted as well, stop using civilians and hospitals as shields, surrender and release all remaining hostages. And this ends as it relates to Israel and Hamas in Gaza. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez felt compelled to respond to that. And she wrote, I care about little kids dying. I care about human rights. I care that billions of U.S. tax dollars worth of weapons are carrying out unspeakable atrocities. I care enough for us to do better. I hope this bleak dunk attempt gets you, meaning Senator Fetterman, gets you whatever it is you're going for. How obtuse can she be when she posts something like that? I care about human rights. Well, if you do, you'd be speaking about Hamas going after civilians in Israel that initiated
all
of this.
She would be condemning, because when you hide behind...
I mean, kids were attacked that day. Women were attacked that day, let alone the hostages still. And she's just, she's bleak.
When you hide behind civilian, when you're a terrorist or you're a soldier, and you hide behind children, when you hide behind civilians, when you hide behind, you know, local townspeople, you are committing a war crime, okay? It, Fetterman has it exactly right. It is all on Hamas. If they stopped firing, if they released the hostages, there'd be no more war.
Yeah, this could be done with.
It would be all done.
Yeah. This is how myopic the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wing of the party is. Okay, last one. This is from a gal out of Oregon, political strategist I follow on social media, Rachel Bitekofer, and she just posts inane stuff because she's a reflexive person and she's compelled to do this. She writes, there is nothing Bernie Sanders ever proposed that's as radical as Trump's plan to kill off the Department of Education, purge the civil service, and replace the income tax with tariffs. There is no such thing as liberal bias in the media. And to that I respond, apparently Rachel Bitekofer didn't hear the Martha Raddatz, J.D. Vance interview about Aurora, Colorado earlier this week.
Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened. Martha. I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment conflicts, apartment complex.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, don't worry. Martha Raddatz knows what happened in case there was any doubt.
Until Vance started to speak, which is that she didn't know what she was talking
about. Nothing like having a national news prognosticator saying, I know what happened. Too many red flags with that, maybe?
Especially when she doesn't know what's happened. That was a wonderful, J.D. Vance own the media moment. It is, I mean, what did he say to, are you even hearing yourself? He said, ouch. It is 29 minutes after 8. When we come back, the Associated Press talks about a groundbreaking law that voters might be repealing. How accurate were they in how they described the Climate Commitment Act and the campaign against it? Todd Myers joins us right around the corner as the Commute with Carlson continues. It is 29 minutes after 8. Let's bring it home local here on the commute this morning. Later today, from noon till 2, at Jackson's Shell Station in Everett, that's right off the 128th exit off I-5. Again, that's in Everett, off 128th at Jackson's Shell Station. The cheapest gas in Washington State is going to be for sale from noon till 2. If you want to pay the state average or less, if you want to pay the national average, which is about $1 a gallon less than the Washington state average, head on out there from noon till 2 today. That is an event being put together by the campaign to pass Initiative 2117. Big article, the Associated Press. Washington State's landmark climate law hangs in the balance this election. The Associated Press probably not going to be pulling down too many awards for fair, balanced, objective, neutral coverage here. Todd Myers from the Washington Policy Center heads their environmental policy research arm, joins us this morning. Good morning, Todd Myers. How are you?
I'm very good. And it shows you how jaundiced I am and used to these sort of articles that I've seen many worse articles than this. But yes, there are definitely some things to clarify in that article.
Right. And I have seen worse articles. However, what concerns me about this is it's AP, so it went all over the state.
That is true.
It goes, you know, not just in one newspaper, it goes in many, many newspapers. What caught your eye?
I did appreciate that they mentioned in there that it increased prices, but there seems to be this very strange thing that people are still doing where they say, well, you know, the Washington Policy Center claims that prices went up. And as we, you know, we have pointed out that this is not difficult. It is the intent to increase prices. And in fact, and as we pointed out in 2014, when Governor Inslee proposed a similar program, his own policy advisor said it would raise prices, ironically, by about 40 cents a gallon, which is what we have seen, because the price they projected would be similar to what we have now. So I think things like that, where they say things that are, you know, very clear, that the data show that they're clear, that people on the other side admit are clear, and cast them as sort of, you know, claims or accusations, that does sort of bother me.
Tell me what the biggest misunderstanding is about Initiative 2117.
Well, I think that there is a general misunderstanding about how it works, and it's confusing. It's not just like a straight tax where you charge a certain amount per gallon or things like that. The prices are set at an auction because for every metric ton of CO2 that is emitted, companies like BP and things like that, they have to buy a permit, and those permits are sold at auction. So the prices go up and down. So, last year it was over 40 cents a gallon of gasoline. This year it's down to about 24 cents a gallon of gasoline. So I think that causes people some confusion. The other thing is that a lot of things that are claimed about 2117, which are, you know, they say it will guarantee CO2 reductions or things like that, simply are false. There's two parts. One is the cap. So only a certain amount of permits are sold up to a cap, and that cap comes down. And what the governor and others say is that guarantees that we will have less CO2 emissions. Except that we're not even 2 years into the program, and Representative Joe Fitzgibbon, who was one of the authors and is the majority leader of the House Democrats, said, well, if prices get too high, we'll put more credits on the market. Well, that's violating the cap. And that's one thing that we have seen with this system around the world is that politicians are incentivized to play games with it and change the cap when it's politically convenient. So the claims that this guarantees we will reduce CO2 emissions turn out to be false. And we're already seeing politicians say, well, we can play games with it to do the things we want and when it's politically convenient. And I think that's really, it's really dangerous, and what it ends up happening is we pay very high costs without actually getting the guaranteed environmental benefit.
The other thing that catches my attention is they're not even measuring any reduction in emissions because they're not keeping track anyway, which tells me that really wasn't the goal. I mean, if your goal is to reduce something, let's take real pollutants, okay? Because carbon dioxide does not strike me as a pollutant, like, say, soot.
Right.
If you have an effort underway to reduce the amount of soot in the air, then you would have a means of measuring that. You would have a means of saying, here's how much progress we're making. Here's how much soot there is, and here's what our target is. We want to bring it down to this level, and here's how we're keeping track of it. They're not doing any of that stuff.
Yes. The analogy I use that is if someone says, you know, education is the most important thing to me for my child, and they say, oh, really? What grades are they getting? And you go, oh, I don't know. Well, it's obviously not the most important thing. So as I just mentioned, there is this cap, and that's one way that the CO2 tax, which is called the Climate Commitment Act, reduces CO2 emissions. But even that cap, you know, they're already talking about fiddling with it. The other way that they talk about is saying, well, we're going to take all these billions of new dollars in taxes and spend it on projects that reduce CO2 emissions. And that is where I think the most glaring example of that they don't really care. And again, they call us a crisis. And if it was a crisis, they would, you know, demand results. But again and again, when you look at the ways that they spend money, they don't actually ensure that it reduces emissions. I'll give you the most recent example. 2 weeks ago, there was a grant that was offered by Department of Commerce, I believe, or Department of Ecology. I can't remember. Anyway, one of those two. They're the two leaders for capturing methane at landfills. Very mundane. And they have all these points, and it's like, oh, if you do this, you get this many points toward the grant, and you know, whoever gets the most points gets the grant. But nowhere in the grant do they actually measure how much methane is captured. Instead, they say, well, is your landfill owned by it privately or publicly? If it's publicly, you get more points than if it's privately. Is it located in a disadvantaged community? If so, then you get more points than if it's not. Now, neither of those things have anything to do with the purported goal, which is to capture methane. Methane is a very potent greenhouse gas. So it's like, what are you trying to do here? Are you trying to capture methane, or are you trying to just, you know, put money in where, you know, you want it for special interests or political or ideological reasons? And again, ideology is what wins out over the environment.
So you've seen some of the commercials opposed to Initiative 2117. Again, if you want to get rid of the Climate Commitment Act and the invisible tax on gasoline, you vote yes to stop it. Vote yes to get rid of it. Or, as Brian Haywood says, vote yes, pay less. Here is what Bill Nye, the science guy, says. He says, take a look at Initiative 2117. It's written to confuse you. The mega millionaires behind it don't want you to know it will mean more air pollution, threaten clean water, and put our health at risk. You don't have to be a science guy to know that 2117 is a bad deal for Washington. What's your rebuttal?
Well, he mentions clean water. There is not a single dollar of the more than $2 billion, actually $3 billion that has been budgeted, that goes to clean water. Not a single dollar. So, like, in their mailers, and Bill had the science guy, they have these pictures of, you know, dirty water, sort of like the Cuyahoga River. There's not a single program that addresses clean water. So it's just false. It's just a completely made up claim. Clean air, there are some things that you can point to that you know, might have an impact on air quality. But the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency did a study in 2019 and found that without any new taxes or programs or anything else, air quality in the Puget Sound region would be much cleaner than it is today. The biggest air quality problem we have is actually not from cars, but from wood-burning stoves. That's where anytime we actually break the caps, that's what causes it. And this, you know, doesn't do anything to really reduce that. So they just sort of say it's going to be, you know, it's going to make air quality worse. It's going to make water quality worse. They just make things up because they know that those are scary. But if you actually look at the programs that are there, they don't do much. And in case of water quality, they do literally zero.
Great clarification. Thank you so much. You know, rebutting Bill Nye, the science guy, not Bill Nye, the science guy, not as tough as a lot of people think.
and one more thing I want to add, which is there, you know, not every dollar is wasted. You know, I don't want to convey that. There are some things in there, some programs that I like. But Washington State has added tens of billions of dollars in spending over the past 4 or 5 years. Our budget has big surpluses, and they're talking about spending $1.3 billion in the next session on pay raises for state employees. And if what you're saying is, oh, kids are going to die because of bad air quality if we, you know, get rid of this, oh, but we're still going to pay the pay raises, then it shows you what your priorities are.
Yeah.
We can do those things that are in there that are important, and some of those things should be done. But, you know, the claim that we can't do them if we can't keep the taxes is just patently false based on the budget numbers.
Todd Myers, Washington Policy Center, always great having you here. Check out his great work at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org. Todd, thanks again for swinging by.
Nice to chat with you.
You got it. It's 12 minutes to 9 o'clock on the commute with Carlson. Bill Clinton may have accidentally told the truth, which means it's not going to help the Kamala Harris campaign. We'll tell you what he said coming right up. Carlson Show. KVI listener Stu on the text line says, you're reinforcing a myth that gas station owners are price gouging every time you have one of those events where you can buy gas cheaper. Please explain who's making up the difference. Stu, the answer is Brian Haywood. Those gas stations are selling gasoline at a loss if they had to pay for it. Brian Haywood is making up the difference so they don't lose. All right, now back to Bill Clinton. Speaking over the weekend to a rally for Kamala Harris, addressing the issue of illegal immigration and the death of 22-year-old Lakin Riley at the hands of an illegal. Well, yeah, but they're not vetted. Talk about accidentally telling the truth. They're not vetted. And that is why so many criminals with dangerous rap sheets are coming here illegally and are allowed to enter and sometimes are even given plane rides to their destination. Here's Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate, Raul Garcia, talking about the issue of vetting. No, that's Bill Clinton. Let's get to Raul Garcia. Here we go.
And when we lose the right to vet who comes in and out of our country, we lose that sovereignty. Not only are we not vetting who comes in and out of our country, but we're allowing drugs and crime to come into our country. The embarrassing thing for our American government is that we don't know who's coming into our country, but the cartels do.
Exactly. He is so right. Raul Garcia. Boy, I hope this guy would be such a great U.S. senator. Raul Garcia tells the truth about vetting in this country. Let's talk again tomorrow. Three and a half minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show, for this 16th day of October, Wednesday edition of The Commute with Carlson. Thank you for joining me. If there is something that you want to let me know about, all you have to do is either call or text. It's the same number. So if you have a comment, you have a question, you will have an observation, go ahead. Let us know, 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. So, to give you an idea of just how low the Kamala Harris campaign will go to try and regain its momentum that they have been steadily losing. Again, they were 4-5 points up a few weeks ago, and now the race is a dead heat with the momentum swinging in Donald Trump's direction in the swing states. And so the Democrats are trying to appeal to parts of their political base that are wandering away. Hispanics have been wandering away for a while. The Democrats' strategy that they thought would gain them more Hispanic votes actually blew up in their face. It's costing them Hispanic votes and a lot of other votes, too, and that is the border. Hispanics who vote, who are citizens, are no happier with the situation on the border than anybody else. So you could almost call that poetic justice. The other segment of the Democrats' electoral base that they're worried about are black men, particularly younger black men. And so how are they trying to get them back on board? Are they touting the success of the Biden economy? Well, no. They're trying to scare them. They are playing on paranoia and conspiracy themes. Just the other day, we played you James Carville, who was Bill Clinton's manager back in 92 and now is known as the Raging Cajun, where he said that Donald Trump was a Nazi, that this rally he's going to have in New York is reminiscent of the Nazi rallies in Berlin, and that he's going to put people in camps. And he said, you young black voters, how do you think you're going to do well when he starts scooping up his political opponents and throwing them in these encampments? He said this. We played it. Unbelievable. Well, Kamala Harris is continuing along that vein with racial politicking. Listen to this. She's taking phone calls on the syndicated radio show, Charlemagne the God calls himself. It's called the Breakfast Club radio show. Goes around the country. And they were taking calls. And you'll hear her take a call from a man in Georgia asking if Donald Trump is going to start locking up non-white people. I'm sure this wasn't a setup, this phone call. But anyway, have a listen. Here's how she handled it.
Let's go to talk back, Eddie.
Hi, I'm Bobby from Georgia, and I have a question for Kamala Harris. Could you please respond to Trump's claim that he's going to use the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 to round up immigrants if he wins the election? This law was last used to put Asian Americans in internment camps during World War II, and I have a sneaking suspicion that if Trump wins, he's going to use this law to put anyone that doesn't look white in camps, and I'm scared.
Mm. Now, the proper response is, well, let's not get carried away. You know, I understand your concerns about Donald Trump, but let's not be paranoid. Oh, no, 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 no. Instead, you get this.
Yeah. So you've hit on a really important point and expressed it, I think, so well, which is he is achieving his intended effect to make you scared. He is running full time on a campaign that is about instilling fear, not about hope, not about optimism, not about the future, but about fear.
Yeah. Well, here's my question. Who's trying to frighten people? Who's trying to scare people here? It's not Donald Trump. It's Kamala Harris. She's the one trying to scare people by feeding into this kind of paranoia. And like I've said before, it's this kind of remarks that we hear from James Carville. A caller, again, almost certainly a setup with Kamala Harris playing in to the fear card. Yes, you make a very important point. Donald Trump may start rounding people up if they're non-white. And he's running on fear. The bottom line is you don't hear about the politics of joy anymore now, do you? This is the politics of fear. Kamala Harris is the politics of fear. And when she's not playing to fear, she's trying to play on racial entitlement. Check out this question that happened. Same radio show, same audience, a largely black audience from Charlemagne the God.
My question to you is, what's your stance on reparations? We all know that America became great, you know, off the backs of free black labor. How progressive are you on making it a priority?
And here's her answer.
So to your point, yes, I am running to be a president for all Americans. That being said, I do have clear eyes about the disparities that exist and the context in which they exist, meaning history, to your point. So my agenda, well, first of all, on the point of reparations, it has to be studied. There's no question about that. And I've been very clear about that position.
Oh, so now we should be open to race reparations. Again, they'll do anything. They'll do anything. By the way, the Trump campaign should let this remark play out for middle America. Let's see how the rest of America, not just the radio listening audience of Charlemagne the God, let's see how the rest of the country reacts to Kamala Harris being open to race reparations. For the record, we have had reparations in America one time. That was in the 1980s, to give reparations several thousand dollars to those who had been interned Japanese Americans, not Asian Americans, as was incorrectly said, Japanese Americans who were interned on the West Coast during the Second World War. What's interesting about these reparations is they didn't go to the grandchildren. They didn't even go to the children. They went to those who were interned, period. And here you have Kamala Harris said, yes, we should study whether to have reparations for the great, 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 great grandchildren. And again, Kamala Harris herself does not trace her ancestry to slavery. In fact, quite the opposite. Kamala Harris's ancestry is in the slave owning business. On her mother's side, they were slave owners, not slaves. So, you know, maybe Kamala, maybe you should write a check if you believe in this kind of down the generational ranks of people being responsible. Maybe you should write a check. But again, this is so ugly. Their attempt to play on race, their attempt to play on paranoia, play on entitlement, play on resentment, and claim that your opponent is trying to scare people while you are saying he just might. Yet you make a really good point that Donald Trump might want to round up and put non-white people in camps. You know, that is what James Carville said the other day. That is what this caller said to the radio show, that she said, it's a very important point you're making, and you made it so well. That's how low they're going to go in this race. And they should be called out for it by the media, that what they're doing is disgraceful, but they probably won't be. That is where they are at. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Still to come on The Commute with Carlson. Todd Myers will be joining us. The Associated Press has a piece here, which is just, again, just a wonderful example of how politicized the media is getting 3 weeks out from the election on local stuff. This is an AP article on the Initiative 2117 to strike down the Climate Commitment Act, which raised the price of gas at one point over 50 cents a gallon, giving us some of the highest gas prices in the country. We'll read excerpts of what the Associated Press had to say, and then we'll have Todd Myers respond to it. As The Commute with Carlson continues, it is 16 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock. It's 22 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Cloudy out there. Baby, the rain will fall later on today. Scattered showers. But Philip J. Vandervoort III is about to tell you what is going on in the social media world when it comes to socialists posting on social media. What's happening?
Is Tim Walz a socialist? We haven't necessarily had a pronouncement on that per se.
Here's what he said. Have we? Here's what he said. Has said. He is every bit as liberal as Gavin Newsom and Jay Inslee. But he has said, quote, one man's socialism is another man's.
Right.
One man's socialism is another man's.
I retract my previous question. We've got it confirmed. Evidence provided by John Carlson.
One man's socialism is another man's neighborliness.
The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I bring all this up. Tim Walz was doing a Walz-Harris campaign, Harris-Walz campaign event, and he went after J.D. Vance, and it sort of seemed unsolicited, but I guess this is what happens in politics nowadays. You just got to attack your opponent when you can't find something coherent or productive to say about your own self and your own campaign. So this clip is circulating on social media where Tim Walz goes after J.D. Vance for being a venture capitalist. Here's a little bit of what Walz said.
And Senator Vance, he became a media darling. He wrote a book about the place he grew up, but the premise was trashing that place where he grew up rather than lifting it up.
That's not true.
This guy's a venture capitalist cosplaying like he's a cowboy or something. I don't even know what a venture capitalist does most.
Duh.
So, is that a bright thing for Tim Walz to admit? I don't even know what a venture capitalist does.
By the way, I've read that book.
Yeah, trying to be folksy.
Hillbilly Elegy. Yeah. I read it several years ago. He does not trash the place he grew up. He was very honest about the place he grew up.
Yeah, I saw the movie. I didn't read the book, but it does seem to display the problems of rural America and the drug addiction problems that his mom goes through and the struggle to raise him with his grandmother and stuff like that. So I don't know that that's amounting to trashing.
He was talking about growing up in a close-knit community where you have economic dislocation, economic recession, together with hopelessness and increasing amounts of drug and alcohol addiction, and what it was like growing up as a boy in that environment. So you, on the one hand, he loves the people around him, and he talks about how when a funeral goes by, people pull over get out of their car and put their hats over their chest.
Yeah, do it as the show of respect. Yeah,
funeral procession goes by, and on the other hand, all of the problems that were part of his. So he wasn't trashing. He was giving an honest accounting. This is life in Appalachia.
Yeah, kind of what sometimes gets referred to as flyover territory, flyover country in the United States,
and
gets forgotten about.
I doubt that Tim Walz has read the book.
Yeah, I would be surprised.
I wonder if he's ever read a book.
He certainly hasn't been reading up on venture capitalism. He's admitted as much to that. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a U.S. congresswoman, And she responded to something that U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania John Fetterman posted.
Mm-hmm.
And Fetterman posted this week about the Gaza-Hamas-Israel war. He posted, the tragedy is in Gaza. The tragedy in Gaza is 100% on Hamas. So that's what Fetterman posted. He indicated.
Good for him.
He posted as well, stop using civilians and hospitals as shields, surrender and release all remaining hostages. And this ends as it relates to Israel and Hamas in Gaza. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez felt compelled to respond to that. And she wrote, I care about little kids dying. I care about human rights. I care that billions of U.S. tax dollars worth of weapons are carrying out unspeakable atrocities. I care enough for us to do better. I hope this bleak dunk attempt gets you, meaning Senator Fetterman, gets you whatever it is you're going for. How obtuse can she be when she posts something like that? I care about human rights. Well, if you do, you'd be speaking about Hamas going after civilians in Israel that initiated
all
of this.
She would be condemning, because when you hide behind...
I mean, kids were attacked that day. Women were attacked that day, let alone the hostages still. And she's just... she's bleak.
When you hide behind civilian, when you're a terrorist or you're a soldier, and you hide behind children, when you hide behind civilians, when you hide behind, you know, local townspeople, you are committing a war crime.
Yeah.
Okay? Fetterman has it exactly right. It is all on Hamas. If they stopped firing, if they released the hostages, there'd be no more war.
Yeah, this could be done with.
It would be all done.
Yeah. This is how myopic the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wing of the party is. Okay, last one. This is from a gal out of Oregon, political strategist I follow on social media, Rachel Bitekofer, and she just posts inane stuff because she's a reflexive person and she's compelled to do this. She writes, there is nothing Bernie Sanders ever proposed that's as radical as Trump's plan to kill off the Department of Education, purge the civil service, and replace the income tax with tariffs. There is no such thing as liberal bias in the media. And to that I respond, apparently Rachel Bitekofer didn't hear the Martha Raddatz, J.D. Vance interview about Aurora, Colorado earlier this week.
Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened. I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complex.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, don't worry. Martha Raddatz knows what happened in case there was any doubt.
Until Vance started to speak, which is that she didn't know what she was talking about.
Nothing like having a national news prognosticator saying, I know what happened. Too many red flags with that, maybe?
Especially when she doesn't know what's happened. That was a wonderful, J.D. Vance own the media moment. It is, I mean, what did he say to, are you even hearing yourself? He said, ouch. It is 29 minutes after 8. When we come back, the Associated Press talks about a groundbreaking law that voters might be repealing. How accurate were they in how they described the Climate Commitment Act and the campaign against it? Todd Myers joins us right around the corner as the Commute with Carlson continues. It is 29 minutes after 8. Let's bring it home local here on the commute this morning. Later today, from noon till 2, at Jackson's Shell Station in Everett, that's right off the 128th exit off I-5. Again, that's in Everett, off 128th at Jackson's Shell Station. The cheapest gas in Washington State is going to be for sale from noon till 2. If you want to pay the state average or less, if you want to pay the national average, which is about $1 a gallon less than the Washington state average, head on out there from noon till 2 today. That is an event being put together by the campaign to pass Initiative 2117. Big article, the Associated Press. Washington State's landmark climate law hangs in the balance this election. The Associated Press, probably not going to be pulling down too many awards for fair, balanced, objective, neutral coverage here. Todd Myers from the Washington Policy Center heads their environmental policy research arm, joins us this morning. Good morning, Todd Myers. How are you?
I'm very good. And it shows you how jaundiced I am and used to these sort of articles that I've seen many worse articles than this. But yes, there are definitely some things to clarify in that article.
Right. And I have seen worse articles. However, what concerns me about this is it's AP, so it went all over the state.
That is true.
It goes, you know, not just in one newspaper, goes in many, many newspapers. What caught your eye?
I did appreciate that they mentioned in there that it increased prices, but there seems to be this very strange thing that people are still doing where they say, well, you know, the Washington Policy Center claims that prices went up. And as we, you know, we have pointed out that this is not difficult. It is the intent to increase prices. And in fact, and as we pointed out in 2014, when Governor Inslee proposed a similar program, his own policy advisor said it would raise prices, ironically, by about 40 cents a gallon, which is what we have seen, because the price they projected would be similar to what we have now. So I think things like that, where they say things that are, you know, very clear, that the data show that they're clear, that people on the other side admit are clear, and cast them as sort of, you know, claims or accusations, that does sort of bother me.
Tell me what the biggest misunderstanding is about Initiative 2117.
Well, I think that there is a general misunderstanding about how it works, and it's confusing. It's not just like a straight tax where you charge a certain amount per gallon or things like that. The prices are set at an auction because for every metric ton of CO2 that is emitted, companies like BP and things like that, they have to buy a permit, and those permits are sold at auction. So the prices go up and down. So, last year it was over 40 cents a gallon of gasoline. This year it's down to about 24 cents a gallon of gasoline. So I think that causes people some confusion. The other thing is that a lot of things that are claimed about 2117, which are, you know, they say they will, it will guarantee CO2 reductions or things like that, simply are false. There's two parts. One is the cap. So only a certain amount of permits are sold up to a cap, and that cap comes down. And what the governor and others say is that guarantees that we will have less CO2 emissions. Except that we're not even 2 years into the program, and Representative Joe Fitzgibbon, who was one of the authors and is the majority leader of the House Democrats, said, well, if prices get too high, we'll put more credits on the market. Well, that's violating the cap. And that's one thing that we have seen with this system around the world is that politicians are incentivized to play games with it and change the cap when it's politically convenient. So the claims that this guarantees we will reduce CO2 emissions turn out to be false, and we're already seeing politicians say, well, we can play games with it to do the things we want and when it's politically convenient. And I think that's really dangerous, and what it ends up happening is we pay very high costs without actually getting the guaranteed environmental benefit.
The other thing that catches my attention is they're not even measuring any reduction in emissions because they're not keeping track anyway, which tells me that really wasn't the goal. I mean, if your goal is to reduce something, let's take real pollutants, okay? Because carbon dioxide does not strike me as a pollutant like, say, soot.
Right.
If you have an effort underway to reduce the amount of soot in the air, then you would have a means of measuring that. You would have a means of saying, here's how much progress we're making. Here's how much soot there is, and here's what our target is. We want to bring it down to this level, and here's how we're keeping track of it. They're not doing any of that stuff.
Yes. The analogy I use that is if someone says, you know, education is the most important thing to me for my child, and they say, oh, really? What grades are they getting? And you go, oh, I don't know. Well, that's like, well, it's obviously not the most important thing. So as I just mentioned, there is this cap, and that's one way that the CO2 tax, which is called the Climate Commitment Act, reduces CO2 emissions. But even that cap, you know, they're already talking about fiddling with it. The other way that they talk about is saying, well, we're going to take all these billions of new dollars in taxes and spend it on projects that reduce CO2 emissions. And that is where I think the most glaring example of that they don't really care. And again, they call us a crisis. And if it was a crisis, they would, you know, demand results. But again and again, when you look at the ways that they spend money, they don't actually ensure that it reduces emissions. I'll give you the most recent example. 2 weeks ago, there was a grant that was offered by Department of Commerce, I believe, or Department of Ecology. I can't remember. Anyway, one of those two. They're the two leaders for capturing methane at landfills. Very mundane. And they have all these points. And it's like, oh, if you do this, you get this many points toward the grant. And, you know, whoever gets the most points gets the grant. But nowhere in the grant do they actually measure how much methane is captured. Instead, they say, well, is your landfill owned by it privately or publicly? If it's publicly, you get more points than if it's privately. Is it located in a disadvantaged community? If so, then you get more points than if it's not. Now, neither of those things have anything to do with the purported goal, which is to capture methane. Methane is a very potent greenhouse gas. So it's like, what are you trying to do here? Are you trying to capture methane, or are you trying to just, you know, put money in where, you know, you want it for special interests or political or ideological reasons? And again, ideology is what wins out over the environment.
So you've seen some of the commercials opposed to Initiative 2117. Again, if you want to get rid of the Climate Commitment Act and the invisible tax on gasoline, you vote yes to stop it. Vote yes to get rid of it. Or, as Brian Haywood says, vote yes, pay less. Here is what Bill Nye, the science guy, says. He says, take a look at Initiative 2117. It's written to confuse you. The mega millionaires behind it don't want you to know it will mean more air pollution, threaten clean water, and put our health at risk. You don't have to be a science guy to know that 2117 is a bad deal for Washington. What's your rebuttal?
Well, he mentions clean water. There is not a single dollar of the more than $2 billion, actually $3 billion that has been budgeted that goes to clean water. Not a single dollar. So, like, in their mailers, and Bill had the science guy, they have these pictures of, you know, dirty water, sort of like the Cuyahoga River. There's not a single program that addresses clean water. So it's just false. It's just a completely made-up claim. Clean air, there are some things that you can point to that you know, might have an impact on air quality. But the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency did a study in 2019 and found that without any new taxes or programs or anything else, air quality in the Puget Sound region would be much cleaner than it is today. The biggest air quality problem we have is actually not from cars, but from wood-burning stoves. That's where anytime we actually break the caps, that's what causes it. And this, you know, doesn't do anything to really reduce that. So They just sort of say it's going to be, you know, it's going to make air quality worse. It's going to make water quality worse. They just make things up because they know that those are scary. But if you actually look at the programs that are there, they don't do much. And in case of water quality, they do literally zero.
Great clarification. Thank you so much. You know, rebutting Bill Nye, the science guy, not Bill Nye, the science guy, not as tough as a lot of people think.
Yeah, and one more thing I want to add, which is there, you know, not every dollar is wasted. You know, I don't want to convey that. There are some things in there, some programs that I like. But Washington State has added tens of billions of dollars in spending over the past 4 or 5 years. Our budget has big surpluses. And they're talking about spending $1.3 billion in the next session on pay raises for state employees. Yeah. And if what you're saying is, oh, kids are going to die because of bad air quality if we, you know, get rid of this, oh, but we're still going to pay the pay raises, then it shows you what your priorities are. Yeah. We can do those things that are in there that are important, and some of those things should be done. But, you know, the claim that we can't do them if we can't keep the taxes is just patently false based on the budget numbers.
Todd Myers, Washington Policy Center. Always great having you here. Check out his great work at washingtonpolicy.org. That's washingtonpolicy.org. Todd, thanks again for swinging by.
Nice to chat with you.
You got it. It's 12 minutes to 9 o'clock on the commute with Carlson. Bill Clinton may have accidentally told the truth, which means it's not going to help the Kamala Harris campaign. We'll tell you what he said coming right up. Carlson Show. KVI listener Stu on the text line says, you're reinforcing a myth that gas station owners are price gouging every time you have one of those events where you can buy gas cheaper. Please explain who's making up the difference. Stu, the answer is Brian Haywood. Those gas stations are selling gasoline at a loss. If they had to pay for it, Brian Haywood is making up the difference so they don't lose. All right, now back to Bill Clinton. Speaking over the weekend to a rally for Kamala Harris, addressing the issue of illegal immigration and the death of 22-year-old Lakin Riley at the hands of an illegal. Well, yeah, but they're not vetted. Talk about accidentally telling the truth. They're not vetted. And that is why so many criminals with dangerous rap sheets are coming here illegally and are allowed to enter and sometimes are even given plane rides to their destination. Here's Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate, Raul Garcia, talking about the issue of vetting. No, that's Bill Clinton. Let's get to Raul Garcia. Here we go.
And when we lose the right to vet who comes in and out of our country, we lose that sovereignty. Not only are we not vetting who comes in and out of our country, but we're allowing drugs and crime to come into our country. The embarrassing thing for our American government is that we don't know who's coming into our country, but the cartels do.
Exactly. He is so right. Raul Garcia. Boy, I hope this guy'd be such a great U.S. senator. Raul Garcia tells the truth about vetting in this country. Let's talk again tomorrow.